Welcome to the Jazz Shapers podcast from Mishkon Dorea. What you're about to hear was originally broadcast on Jazz FM. However, the music has been cut due to rights issues.
This is Jazz Shapers with Elliot Moss on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkon Dorea. It's business, but it's personal. Listening colour.
Welcome to Jazz Shapers with me, Elliot Moss, bringing the shapers of the business world together with the musicians shaping jazz, soul and blues. My guests today, I'm very pleased to say, are Lisa and Alana McFarlane, founders of The Gut Stuff, a multi-industry platform democratising gut health education. DJing for 7 years as the Mac Twins, Alana and Lisa had regular live shows on BBC One Extra and Virgin Radio, as well as performing at the Olympics and as the official Love Island DJs. Finding out a lot more about that soon. Invited to take part in twin research at King's College London under Professor Tim Spector, they became the chief guinea pigs for the British Gut Project, discovering that despite having 100% the same DNA, their guts have only 30 to 40% the same microbiota, I hope I said that correctly, which explained why their bodies behave so differently. I'm sure there's a lot to discuss there. Fascinated by the science and how many health issues gut bacteria was linked to, Lisa and Alana set out on a mission to shake up the confusing elitist communication around gut health and make it accessible and fun. And boy, have they done that. The Gut Stuff launched in 2017, and they now have a successful snacking range of corporate wellness services, business, 3 books, a consumer-focused gut health app, I hope this finishes at 10 o'clock, and a now global TV show. Firstly, great to have you here, behind microphones again, back by
popular... It's been a while.
It's been a while, but they're kind of settled in very quickly here, back by popular demand. The DJing thing, I just want to start in a random place. What's it like when you know lots of people... He says, asking question, it's ridiculous. What's it like when you know lots of people are listening to you or watching you? Was that a buzz?
I think you have to not be able to compute that. Otherwise, yeah. You would just be paralysed. Like, I genuinely think, especially in radio, I think the beauty of it is you believe you're talking to one person. And I think the intimacy of that is quite, like, obviously, like, Virgin was a Saturday night show, so it was, you were aware that people were getting ready to go on a night out whilst they were chatting to us. But it really did just feel like it was us and our producers.
Yeah, and I think when we did the bigger gigs, like the Hogmanay, 2,000 people, Twickenham, 8,000 people, because you were just in your own little world, that you couldn't really compute like everyone in that whole stadium almost. Mm. It was actually the more intimate gigs that you felt more connected, I'd say. Mm. Like in a club, sweaty club at 3 a.m.
Oh, that, when you can see people. The 3 people that hate what you're playing glaring
yeah.
at you.
Yeah.
Feels
quite stressful.
More exposing, yeah. Yeah. I think. Then yeah. That felt more exposing than 80,000 people.
Yeah. But there's a contradiction, isn't there? Because actually, and I just saw Mark Ronson talking about his new book, and the intimacy and the privacy and the solitude actually of being a DJ, even in a big club, is kind of quite strong because that's what you're doing. You're concentrating and you're doing your thing. And of course, you're reacting to the crowd. But then going out and talking about the gut stuff and amplifying for the last 8 years what you do in all the different ways, they're very different things.
Yeah, I think, I guess, like with the DJ side, it was more of like a rehearsed performance, if that made sense. But and like apart from when we were doing like 5 hours when we first started out in like Whiskey Mist in the West End,
that we used to cry on the night bus on the way there, and cry on the night bus on the way
because
the manager used to shout at us to mix every 30 seconds for 5 hours. Like it was
horrendous.
Yeah. But it was a great place,
great
to
training ground for us. Yeah, it was a great training ground. But I guess with the gut stuff, it's just different. Like, we are so passionate about getting the word out there, and it's like just speaking from, I don't want to say from the heart, from the gut, I don't know. It just feels,
it's
very,
within.
Very different. Yeah.
It's also
like now 0.005% of our day-to-day is doing fun things like this. Like, a lot of it is running a startup, which unfortunately has been glamorised a lot in the past few years.
But we know the truth.
But it's hell.
Yeah.
It's, you know, sitting behind the P&L doing boring insurance forms.
Yeah,
a lot
blood
of the
drawn
time.
Cold moments all the time.
For those people that don't know about the gut, and my wife has had, you know, health issues many years ago, and then actually the gut was the way in for her many years ago, 20 years. Tell me in your own words, and I've read a lot and I'm fascinated and I look at the foods, and Tim Spector's a bit of a hero to me in terms of the work that he does. But in your own words, what is the gut? Why is it important?
I think you know, if you don't know about gut health, then you assume, like we did, that your gut is just your stomach.
Or your beer belly.
Yeah, well, what
beer belly?
Yeah,
exactly. They're going early here. Let's see what's happening. Thank you, Lana.
And Tim, actually, when we first asked, he was like, do you want to have your guts analysed? And we were like, we actually said, what do you mean, our beer bellies? but it's a big piece of kit. You know, it's everything from mouth to bum. And there's a lot of organs involved. And I guess the physical working of our gut is what we're talking about partially when we talk about gut health. But I think this new area of research into the microbiome, which is the bacteria, fungi, viruses that live in, around and on us. But the reason that we associate a lot of them with the gut is because most of them live in our large intestine. It's kind of damp and moist there. And they like to hang out in there. And not only do they help us digest and absorb food, they are linked to pretty much every health condition and outcome. And in current, you know, medicine and I guess it's hard because it's like difficult to explain the magnitude of the jobs that they do and the wellness side of them. You know, yes, we've come to gut health from a wellness perspective, but there's also, you know, a lot of people, I think 46% of the UK population now have a digestive issue as well. So it's these this double-pronged thing of, yes, it's a huge wellness trend and everyone needs to know about it, but I think it is also going to be a crucial part in the future of our healthcare system.
I'm with Lisa and Alana McFarlane, and they are the founders of The Gut Stuff. And we're talking about what is the gut, and of course, it's a big question, and it's got a big answer, and it's a big place. Why? Why was this so important to the two of you? Why were you so piqued and wanted to find out more, and then were crazy enough to set up a business?
Yeah, I guess we're from, you know, a Scottish working class background. Health was just not being ill, and wellness was something that Gwyneth Paltrow talked about.
And still
you
does.
Know, and still does.
Yeah. And the average life expectancy, you know, we were from Scotland, was 58 for men, 52, I think, even. So, you know, health was, yeah, just not on our agenda. You know, if you told us when we were younger that we'd own a health and wellness business, you know, we'd ask what you'd been smoking or drinking, really. But as we went through the research, you know, we were those people, before we went through the research, clinical trials with Tim, that did the cabbage soup diet, the Dukin diet, every fad diet, you name it, we did it. And health was just what was seen on the outside, something that we did 2 weeks before we went on holiday. And then we went to Magaluf and drank 40 litres of vodka. So, you know.
Sounds like my oldest daughter.
Yes. Yeah. What she gal? Can be in our gang. She might own a health and wellness business.
She'll come out the other end, I promise.
Yeah. But as we were going through the research, you know, when, first of all, we learned what our gut actually was and how important it was. And these microbes, you know, when we first started learning about these microbes, we were like, oh, give me a bath. Like, we're 80s babies. Where's the Dettol? You know, we were like, this is really weird. How did I not know for the first 25 years of my life that these beasties, we started calling them, I couldn't be alive without them. And, you know, our chief science officer says if an alien was to come down from outer space, they'd actually see us all as hybrid creatures, so half human, half microbial. That is how many microbes live in, around and on us, which is a scary thought when you don't know what you don't know yet, right? So we were like, why does no one know about this? This was 10 years ago. So at the time, people were not talking about gut health like they are now. People are like, you two have lost the plot.
Yeah, there was no Zoe, there was no Tim Spector, there was no sense of anything.
There was no, the public awareness was zero.
There
really.
Was like, I guess Kellogg's and Danone and like big food brands
thing and
digestive health.
And then I guess the conversations that were starting to happen were in certain publications or in the back of health food stores when people were trying to charge like £6 for a jar of cabbage. You're like, it's sauerkraut, but it's just cabbage in a jar. So we were like, the people that need this information most aren't getting it, and we want to democratise this information. And also, we were DJing on Love Island at the time, and we were like, imagine if we can get the people watching the show to start thinking about the inside out rather than
the
outside in.
For me, that's the leap. That's the creative leap, which says, hold on a minute, there's this thing which is, as we've talked about, elite and specialist, and then there's this massive need, millions and millions, the whole population needs to, what if we use the but naively, but brilliantly too. And yet, neither of you went to uni. One was dancer. Which one was? Alana, dancer.
Yeah.
I think theatre producer.
School,
you went to drama school. You've come back to something quite academic.
Yeah, I guess I was meant to do law and business at uni, and Lisa was meant to do medicine.
And how did that go down?
We changed our UCAS forms. Yeah, that was
what made you both do it?
I think we just knew that we could always come back to academia at some point. I mean, I did physics and chemistry. At A level, got straight A's, and then was like, I'm going to drama school, bye bye. And mum and dad were like, no, the first people in the family to go to uni. I'm like,
literally, first in the family.
And they're not.
Yeah. So when we die, our obituaries will look like it was planned, but it wasn't.
Definitely
but
wasn't.
I think maybe our like naturally our sort of curiosity. And I think when we started going through the research with him, he was like, you guys asked so many questions. But I think it sort of scratched that science itch. And I think our life must have just brought us back that way because we wanted to use that part of our brains that wasn't, you know, as much as we loved it, being used, DJ.
Yeah.
And we're going to catch up and find out exactly what that looks like in terms of setting up a business, which was obviously the ridiculous thing that you chose to do.
Yeah.
Why didn't you just carry on asking questions? Anyway, Lisa and Alana will be answering that very shortly, but they'll be back in a few minutes. Right now, though, we're going to hear a taster from the Michigan Innovation Series, which you can find on all the major podcast platforms. Lydia Kellett invites business founders to share their practical advice and industry insights for those of you thinking about starting your very own thing, as crazy as that might be. In this clip, we hear from Dr. Max Munford, co-founder and CEO of Austech, the medtech company on a mission to transform orthopedic surgery through cutting-edge 3D printing technology.
The Michigan Innovation Series. Inspiration from founders of cutting-edge businesses. In association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
What advice would you give to those in the early stages of creating a new-to-the-world technology?
When you start building a company, there are three things that become very obvious, and that's that products, process and people are really important. You know, product, so that's making sure you speak to the right customers, making sure you've got your technology. Absolutely. You know, in lots of ways, that's obvious, especially coming as an engineer by background, that's very obvious. Process, I think, is definitely not obvious to me, actually, but everything in your company, everything, the way you conduct yourself, the way the company runs, all of that, I would sum up as process and is incredibly important. It can, I think, make or break you. But actually, people, I think, are the most important part of the company. If your processes are wrong, if your product is wrong, the right people can fix them and navigate that. So I think making sure at the earliest possible stage that you've integrated the right people, making sure it's a diverse group of people, making sure that your team can actually collaborate, making sure you invest time and in some cases money or training in building that team, building them together, I think that's the most important thing you can do.
The Michigan Innovation Series, in association with Jazz Shapers, with Michigan Dorea.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Michigan Dorea. It's business, but it's personal.
You can enjoy all our former Business Shapers. I think there's around 500 of them now on the Jazz Shapers podcast. You can hear this very program again if you pop Jazz Shapers into your podcast platform of choice. That's pretty easy, isn't it? My guests today are Lisa and Alana McFarlane, founders of The Gut Stuff, a multi-industry platform. It's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? Democratizing gut health education. So we've established you're both very curious. You're the why birds. You're asking, what, you're academic, but you chose not to go to uni. But then you decided to set your own business up. The glamour of Love Island was not enough. The allure of the Olympics wasn't big enough for these two. What happened in those early days and months? What went through your head? Did you think we've made a massive error here? Or was it like, no, we're clear, this is for us?
I think I missed the early days of the hustle. We had nothing to lose. I think fast forward to now, you know, we've got other people's mortgages to pay. We have investors to talk, you know, to answer to. And we're on the train that we can't get off, basically. Yeah. You know, there's not a day off. You know, we've grown exponentially over the last year or two that there's nothing we can do to stop
it. Do you take time out there? We talk about wellness and you're in a wellness business. Alana, Seriously, when do you stop?
Yeah, we're not good at it.
We're
naturally not good. Like, we're Duracell bunnies. Like, everyone that meets us, like, you know, I can't stop.
But
like,
when you do stop, what happens? Are you kind of on or off? Are you literally fall asleep and the rest is go?
Yeah, and we sleep well, so I think that's probably it. Like, you know.
We have martinis.
We love a martini. Hashtag gut health.
Which particular martini? Hashtag
dirty,
who cares about gut
health?
Dirty martini.
Filth.
Ooh, filthy.
I've actually moved more into, because I've not got a partner in crime now because Lisa's pregnant, I've moved more into lemon twist.
Yeah,
with the lemon twist is lovely. Yeah, it's got a bit of a zing to it.
Yeah,
but we used to do like, yeah. So my husband works at night. He's in the West End, and Lisa's husband works away a lot. So I used to go down to Lisa's at the weekend, and we'd just spend time with each other and the kids.
Drinking.
Yeah.
Well, we used to say like, I think that's really important. Like, having a co-founder is brilliant.
Yeah.
But it also means that our sister relationship came second. So like our sister relationship came second to the business. So we had to carve out time to just talk about normal sisterly stuff, mainly arguing, probably.
But do you talk about
sisterly
stuff?
Well, we always say we'd start with the margarita, and by margarita 3, we are back to talking about the gut business. So we try.
Yeah.
I think the kids sort of help dilute.
Yeah, we talk about the kids more.
You know, and back to the start of the journey, we were so naive. Like, it was like brilliantly naive. And I think that, you know, how we've built the business was out of, I guess there's, you know, like the FMCG business was born out of doing services and education and things like that. But I think we would have been so paralysed, we would never have started. And I think the naivety
if we knew what we knew now, if we went, would we do food and drink again? Oh my God.
But no, low margin, high volume product in COVID. No.
And to be for the masses, you know, we were never going to be this luxury product that people were spending £80 for, right? We knew we had to be affordable, accessible for everyone because that was our mission. But that takes a hell of a long time to get there. You've got to get to the stage of critical mass, which we now have with Tesco and Sainsbury's and Co-op. But, you know, to get there has been a journey. And I think, I think we were just so gung-ho, wonderfully gung-ho and naive that I think if we knew what we know now, you know, of course we'd do it again. But, you know, it's been a roller coaster.
But it's a roller coaster and you're on the ride. You still kind of enjoy the ride. To a point. I'll ask you about levels of enjoyment out of 10, but not for now. It's a moment. But I want to talk about the gung-ho thing and how that's informed how you actually brought this thing to life, because I think it's a really important part of the strategy, if we're going to call it a strategy, the thing you've done. To me, the way you brought this brand to life, the way that you articulated what it was all about has been key. Just talk to me a little bit about that gung-ho-ness, as it were, and the sorts of things that you did.
Yeah, I guess like, then you know, we had the brand before the business, so we were able to do and say a lot more than if we'd led with product, which I think that can be quite constraining because you have different sets of regulations, as you know, the lawyers amongst us will know. But I think we were able to be bold, and the only people that we had to answer to was...
Each other
and the ASA.
The Advertising Standards Authority.
Yeah.
They didn't like the word poo.
They were all right with that. It was we had a campaign that was meant to be on bus stops, like put it in the BS bin type thing. And it was like, cut the this Whatever. January. Yeah. They didn't like that.
And you know, we actually, the poo posters came up, my husband and I, over Christmas dinner, and he was like, I think you just need to put the Bristol stool chart on bus stops and name the poos really funny names.
The Bristol stool chart, that reminds me.
And then suddenly we won so many awards.
We're on Sky News.
Air Media. And I think that, I would love to try and, but we just can't. That was too big now. But that naivety and just being like, well, we can do that. Or we'll just go into that retailer. Like for one retailer that we're now listed in, we basically got a friend that worked there to put stool posters on the back of the toilets and just like ask the catering staff to do that. And, you know, like there was that sort of
that
like attitude. Hustle.
And that being more maverick, now that you're much bigger, much harder to be gung-ho, how do you channel your creativity? How do you make stuff happen, even though you're a much bigger business now?
I think we annoy everyone in the team because they're working on something and we're like, but what about this? And let's do that. And
so you haven't lost that energy?
We did actually check ourselves. Like bottoms in Co-op.
No ifs or buts.
No ifs or buts.
And it was a balloon
bum.
In the bottom of the FSD.
So they are now in court.
So yeah, we do get a chance to be cheeky.
But I think it's an attitudinal thing. And I think like the values we have as a business is not being scared to be in the room with the big guys. And I think
guys and gals,
of course. That is something I hope we've instilled in the team is that don't be afraid to pitch that or say that, or sit in a room with people and ask for what you feel like you deserve.
And I think when you're mission-led, it's not about us. It's not about, you know, how much product we shift. Like, this is a mission that needs to happen. You know, we have, you know, it is so, so important for the health of the nation. And I think when you have that as the backstop and the fire in your belly, you'll ask anything.
Yeah. Final chat with my guest today, Lisa and Alana. And we've got a treat from Anne Peebles. That's in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
I've got a few more minutes with the people that have been on my case. Not what I've been on your case, I suppose. Lisa and Alana McFarlane, they're the founders of Gut Stuff. There's an energy that you two have, which is obviously just, I would assume, nature as much as nurture. How do you chill out? When do you stop? And if you don't, how do you make sure that you maintain happiness and joy?
Yeah, we need to get better at it, but I think we are very social beasts. We're very loyal. Our friendship group is, we are very close. And so we talk about like switching off. We go to the pub and talk about, in Scotland we call it the Yibsy Yabsies, but it's basically talking about everything and nothing. And that is, I guess, our way of switching off. But we're not very good at switching off and doing nothing. We sort of switch off by doing. So we did this thing. We took the team forest bathing. Don't know if you've heard of it. The art of forest bathing. But anyway, you go around. It's almost like meditating. When I have to meditate, if someone asks me to meditate, I cannot sit still. Whereas this is more going around in nature, really noticing the beauty of things, notice how things move and using all your senses. And we really, really enjoyed it. And all the team really enjoyed it as well. So I think I sort of switch off by
doing... And the kids slow us down, you know, they're... There, you know, you've got to keep them alive.
You've got to keep them alive. You've got to make sure that you water them and feed them. So actually, you've got two kids between you, but we've also got
eminently, another boy on the way.
And, but my Lisa's son was due on my daughter's birthday. And
they're genetically half brother and sister.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Okay, so they're cousins, but they're genetically half brother and sister. Yeah.
And they genuinely love each other so much.
And I should say, if you haven't already looked Lisa and Alan up, you will not have realised they are twins. I didn't say it at the beginning, but you are twins. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is a thing when you work together.
And I guess, we are very, very different, like opposites, I would say. But that's helped us in the business because we're actually mirror twins. So Lisa's left side of her brain, like Lisa's very creative, was always really good at English at school, and I like doing all the sort of, I'm very matter-of-fact, binary.
Ops, numbers.
Yeah, right. The boring stuff, Lisa would say.
Do you switch roles occasionally?
Yeah, so I'm started doing more of the finance stuff. We've got a finance director, and I guess as you grow, finance becomes more of a narrative than numbers, especially when you have a finance director that can give you them. So I'm better at shaping that narrative and conversation
Lisa does
now.
More of the fundraising.
So we're just gearing up for that now.
Because again, we were talking about the DJ thing, and at one point you were talking about who runs the desk and who's doing more of the talking and all that. But actually, in this conversation, it is, as I said to you, I'm talking to one person. I don't mean that in a weird way, but there's a little river running and we're just going left and right, but it feels...
Well, Mum always says we're half-wits. Because with the egg split, so together, we would be a superhuman. Yeah. But we just take half of
each. Or she says, it's like being at the tennis, it's exhausting. Thank you, Mother.
So that the relaxing bit is actually through conversation. It's through it's through connection.
Yeah.
It's through doing stuff together rather than not doing anything at all.
Yeah. We can just lie on the sofa and watch Netflix.
And what's next for this business? What happens in the ideal world?
There's all the nuts and bolts stuff. Like we're launching new MPD in January. The team is growing by the day. We're gearing up for the Series A. Once I've got the baby out and had a night's sleep, which
isn't going to happen,
movable feast. And I guess genuinely, like moving into new territories, a lot of our audience in the US, et cetera, et cetera. But for us, trying to keep the core of what we started and democratizing gut health and really staying true to that mission as we grow feels like a bigger task than the growth bit, I think, staying true to why we started it. And I think keeping checks on ourselves is really important as well in terms of the decisions that we make. We started it with a purpose, and I think that you can lose sight of that when it gets exciting and it starts to grow. So I think that's the main thing,
Trying to
get some sleep, that's a...
Yeah, you're going to need some sleep. I would start getting that bank full. It's already going to get tricky.
The third trimester just doesn't serve that. My son's still young, so he's still getting... I'm like, how many teeth come? Like, how is he still getting teeth?
How many sleep regressions do you need? God's sake.
Innumerable, unfortunately. And the teeth will stop at some point. Yeah. And then there'll be something else.
There'll be something else.
The joy. Psychological warfare of having teenagers and children.
Welcome to my world too. It's been brilliant talking to both of you. Thank you. Thank you both so much for your time. Just before I let you disappear, what's your song choice and why have you chosen it?
So we've got a bit of a random story behind this, but we basically, when we first started presenting, were flown to Nashville by Jack Daniels. And we were taken to, this random place in Nashville, and Steve Cropper, who co-wrote Sitting on the Dock of the Bay, which is our song, was there.
We watched him live, sat next to him while he sang it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And at the time we were like, what? And like, our dad was alive at the time, and we were sort of messaging him going, like, sending him videos. He was like, this is insane.
Amazing.
Like, you two don't know how lucky you are.
But it was our first time we'd been paid to, like,
we thought that was what our career was going
to
be. Like, that was going to be like that all the time. And then obviously you hit the reality and you have to DJ for 50 quid for 7 hours.
It was the start of us really believing that two wee working class girls from Scotland could do something with their lives, I think. And that was like a real catalyst for us at that moment.
Otis Redding there with Sitting on the Dock of the Bay. The song choice of my business shapers, Lisa and Alana McFarlane. I loved how they talked about their own brand, wonderfully gung-ho, and not just the brand, of course, but them as people and their personalities and what that brought to and continues to bring to the business. don't be afraid to sit in the room with the big guys and girls. That point about as you're growing as a business, you've got to have that inner confidence that you're in the right place and you deserve a seat at the table. And finally, how do you manage the stress? Well, people do it differently. They talk with their friends, close friends and family. The yibsy yabses, as they said, and as what they would have said in Scotland. That's how they do it. Talking over a drink, often a dry martini, in a bar or a pub, somewhere nice. Great stuff. That's it from Jazz Shapers. Have a lovely weekend.
Jazz Shapers on Jazz FM. In partnership with Mishkondorea. It's business, but it's personal.
We hope you enjoy that edition of Jazz Shapers. You'll find hundreds more guests available for you to listen to in our archive. To find out more, just search Jazz Shapers in iTunes or your favourite podcast platform, or head over to mishkon.com/Jazz Shapers.